All righty. Hey there, Laker fans. Welcome to Lakers Detail. I'm your host, Vinay, with my co-host, Raj. Raj, it's been 2 weeks. We've got some news on the Lakers front that we have to catch up on. Darvin Ham has been let go. Christian Wood has opted in. And there are some names that were floating around as potential Laker candidates, head coaching candidates, who have taken jobs elsewhere. So now we're kind of whittling down to the list of prospective names that are available. So we're going to get into a lot of different topics. And then today was the draft lottery, which has some implications that Laker fans should be considerate of. So there's a lot of different stuff to talk about. And we'll definitely be kind of hitting a bunch of these different topics. But before we get into that, Rod, it's been 2 weeks. Mm. How are you feeling, dude? How are you doing? You've been watching the playoffs. You've been seeing anything that you like, you don't like? What's going on?
Yeah, it's funny to kind of jump back in. Took a little bit of a break from just, you know, all type of basketball content analysis. Today was Mother's Day, so happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. Great mothers, yeah, doing absolutely. A great job. Yeah, that allow us to kind of do what we do. But no, it's been fun, man. It's interesting because I think the playoffs not only reveal what works, but also kind of give a license for teams to change things, right? And it's funny how a narrative can flip in literally 5 days, right? Denver was on the ropes. People were, you know, up to the point where they were questioning the title from last year, Vinay, up to that point. You know, Jokic just got his third MVP. Do we want to give the third MVP to a guy who's about to lose in, you know, the second round and in this fashion? Jaden McDaniels, right? Naz Reid, Rudy Gobert's kind of life-changing narrative was hitting, right? Like, oh, maybe we're the analytical, I don't want to say nerds because I feel like I'm a part of that, but, you know, like the analytical kind of people, were they correct this whole time about Rudy Gobert? And Denver goes and punches them right in the mouth right back. And all the questions about Gobert come right back up. All the questions about Jaden McDaniels who can't shoot come right back up. And so it's fun to watch the playoffs kind of go back and forth. Like that, as you go on these different series, right? You can go to OKC and Dallas, which has been really enjoyable. The Knicks dominated, right? The first few weeks of really the playoffs. Now they're 2-2, and now Tibbs' coaching is becoming in question, right? Did he leave his guys on the ropes? It's just funny how the narratives kind of flip. But it's been fun. Had a great day today, just enjoying Mother's Day, and no Lakers game that I had to look forward to. But yeah, everything's good. How are you holding up, man?
I'm doing good, man. I've actually been staying away from the Laker topic stuff. You know, we didn't really touch on it because we're not a hip hop podcast, but I know you're a big Drake fan. And I mean, I'm cool. I just like music, so I don't really pick sides or anything like that. It's just, but there that like carried my timeline for like 2 weeks, the Kendrick versus Drake thing, and I was all in it. Now I was just like, oh my God, this is crazy. What are these accusations and all that sort of stuff? And it looks like it's finally kind of cooled down a little, or like it's concluded. Even though both fan bases are still like, can I give you an example? This beef, if I had to give an analogy of what it reminds me of, this is like the NBA equivalent of the 2016 playoffs where the Cavs came back against the Warriors in the sense of it's not a comeback, but in the sense of like they're so like two very clear factions of fans. It's like the Bron fans versus the Steph fans, and like this hip-hop beef turned into that, and I was just like, oh, there's these Kendrick fans and Drake fans. And I always like to make that joke. I make the joke that the Venn diagram of Drake fans and Bron fans is actually just a single circle. There's no two circles. It's just one circle. They're more often than not, you know, because they're longevity. And, you know, I think they've always like in their raps talked about like Drake.
Right. And not just that, like they're connected as people. Yeah, right. Drake and LeBron are literally very close. No, it's weird. I think it's gotten, which the internet does for a lot of things, Vinay, but the internet has kind of killed the fun in this as well.
Yes.
It was very enjoyable. Yes. It was about the music. It was about the lyrics. It was about, you know, the beats and who was responding when. And then it took a turn to try to, you know, analyze every lyric in reality and bring it to reality, which I just don't think was the motive for both of this. I think this was a cool art and exhibition between the two best artists in the world. I've enjoyed it that way. And once they stop making music about each other, I have very little interest in becoming a CIA investigator and, you know, trying to put dates to different things. And I just, these are two very wealthy people who have no idea who I am. Right. And have no idea who most of these people are. And I think we forget how big the world actually is. As big as Twitter feels sometimes, I promise you both these artists are going to be more than okay after this. And we'll be continuing to listen to their music and albums that get released. So I've enjoyed it. I really did. People can stop adding me. I'm not losing sleep. Like I am not on the payroll. Like I do not get checks from OVO and all that.
I saw that.
I did not lose. I am not down 3-0, whatever you want to put the number at. I got good music out of two artists that have got to fill up my playlist. And that's I think I won in that case. You want to say who won? Go ahead. Like there's no real scoreboard up there. It's been fun though. It's been enjoyable and a nice kind of break, I guess, from it's a nice distraction since the Lakers.
Yeah. Lost. Yeah, that I mean that consumed my timeline for like a whole week. And
it's still there.
Yeah. Every podcast is talking about it and it was on the news and dude, it was so the reason I'm laughing when you're saying that is because more often than not, you know, people don't get mad at you. I don't know if they're mad at you, but people don't like get like upset with you. And for the folks that don't know, people in the Discord know, people in the group chats know, but like I have this joke with Raj. We always make this joke that I can say the same thing. Raj can say the same thing that I'll say when it comes to Lakers basketball. He can give almost verbatim the same exact opinion, and people will get super upset at me, but they won't get mad at Raj. So it was nice to watch Raj draw some negativity from the timeline for once, because I was just like,
it's not even about basketball. It's just, it's a totally different topic that I drew negativity for.
You made such an innocent comment. You're like, oh, yeah, two diss tracks each. Looks like the score is tied up 2-2. Like
yeah. Very oh, I got jumped.
People
like, yes.
You're like, what? What are you talking? 3-1, 4-0.
I don't want to rant on this, but like my most upsetting part about this is the amount of people who speak on this in terms of just like this is right or wrong, like this is math, you know, or science or the laws of physics where there's a correct answer on this. Yeah. Like there's people like in my mentions giving me paragraphs, Vinay, of Raj, this is like, I'm like, it's music. Like, let me enjoy what I enjoy and you can enjoy kind of who you enjoy. So like just the lecturability of it, of like people who really aren't like in the music space either. Like we're both in the same position. We both listen to music and we have our opinions on it. So just enjoy the music, man. Like just enjoy the music.
It was good. It was just for those couple of days. It was just funny to read through the comments and be like, oh, wow, these people are really upset at Raj for just giving his opinion. So, anyways, back to basketball. So the last time we spoke was actually right before, I want to say a day before Darvin Ham was actually let go. And we speculated that he was going to get let go eventually. It was just a matter of time before that was going to happen. And quite literally the next day is on that Friday is when he got let go. I've had some thoughts, Raj, like since then. And I think the thoughts are still there even prior to that. And I feel like we covered it on the pod. But I don't want to say like Darvin Ham caught a raw deal or anything like that. But I certainly don't think that everything landed on him. And I think you and I both kind of came to the conclusion that somebody's going to have to take the fall for this. It's just kind of how things work. It's not fair sometimes. And Ham did have his flaws too, as well. So it's not as if he was, you know, like he had no percentage weight in any of this, but he's gone now. And now the Lakers have to figure it out again. And this will be the fourth coach in this LeBron tenure that we're going to be adding to the team: Luke Walton, Frank Vogel, Darvin Ham, and now whoever the fourth guy is. But Christian Wood also opted in. Those are really the two main things that have happened. There's been rumors of D'Lo wanting to opt out, but that's not been confirmed just yet.
Right.
Where are you with like some kind of the transactions that have happened, the firings and the two potential player option transactions?
Yeah, I think just with Darvin, I think we did a little bit of an autopsy on that in the previous pod in terms of what we'll remember him for. And yeah, he was let go. I think Darvin had 2 years left on his deal, I believe, so there would be some money to eat. Yeah, I've given Darvin a little bit more grace, and another thing I got jumped for online, which again is rare, as you mentioned, but
very rare.
I said I said this is a this is all I said, Vinay, because you know I put things in as I don't know, like as soft as I actually the I try to soften the blow as much as I can. But all I said was this is a difficult position to hold. Like the Lakers' job is a difficult position to hold.
Yeah.
Frank Vogel also got fired this weekend, right? And another coach that's not perfect, and I don't think there's a perfect one that exists on the market. But Frank Vogel just got fired. But he won a title in 2020. We are in 2024. He's been fired twice since then, and 1 year he took off. Right? So like, you just think about that in terms of just how volatile the job is of an NBA coach just in general. And then you put that with the spotlight with the Lakers. You put that with the spotlight of having LeBron on your team. And George, you know, brings up a good point. If you lose the locker room, you can't bring him back. And I think that's fair. I think that's a fair way. And I think that's part of why he's not an employee of the Lakers anymore. I would also like to, I think that statement is said all the time without, like, let's rewind. Why did he lose the locker room? You know, like, where did he lose it at? I think that's an interesting kind of discussion. And when I just look at that, it's the Rui, Torian Prince, and then benching Austin kind of mode, which I would love to have some truth serum in Darvin and understand that. But he's no longer an employee, and the Lakers have to go and get another coach and bring on all these expectations of next year. And the D'Lo stuff, I want to get to that when that's official. I think it's very tough to kind of parse out what's real and what's not with that. I think that really depends on the market and who's available. I'm surprised Christian Wood opted in, though. Vinay, I don't know about you, but I was surprised. He's a guy that I think that would have got a minimum anywhere. And now that he opts in, he's kind of, his fate is now, I don't know if he's done it officially or not, but his fate is kind of up to now the Lakers if they want to move him or do whatever with his deal. So I think that's interesting. But yeah, the Darvin stuff, it was expected he'd be gone. I think there's a little bit of coaches are the lowest hanging fruit, which means anyone can grab it, right? And it's not like attacking anyone. It's just, I think that's how the analysis works, where you, like, a coach's job is not only the closest to the people watching, but it's also the farthest, because you have, like, their job is literally not the 40, you know, 8 minutes that are played. Their job is in everything else, and it's stuff that we aren't privy to, which is tough to judge it based on the exact result that plays out on the court. There's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that goes on. So good luck to Darvin wherever he goes. It feels like he'll be sitting in Phoenix with their new coach that they just signed in Mike Budenholzer. But strange times, new coaches, new this coaching list is interesting. But where are you at with those transactions? What's most interesting to you?
I think you bring up a good point. I think everybody brings up a good point. Like, you lose the locker room, that's pretty much the death stroke for any coach. Sure. It doesn't really matter what the performance is. Before that, I'm also with you too as well. I think he's going to rebound pretty quickly. I think that he's been rumored to potentially be going to that Charlotte position as an assistant head coach with Charles Lee. And then also, you know, with Budenholzer, who was supposedly a candidate for the Lakers, and as was Charles Lee too as well. And, you know, he probably has an option of where they went, or he can take a break too if he wants to as well. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, we wish the best to Darvin. I mean, he did help us get to a Western Conference Finals where both of our stars were compromised a little bit physically, and we made a pretty improbable run. So I'm good with that. You know, the Christian Wood thing was interesting, Raj. So there's this general rule of thumb, right? Like that we like to, like I always say, that if a player can get more guaranteed, can get guaranteed money elsewhere, they'll opt out. And that's like for any player option. Anybody who has a player option, if they know that they can get guaranteed money elsewhere, they'll opt out. So him opting in was definitely a little strange, because it doesn't seem like he searched the market, you know, like he didn't explore the market at all. Maybe he thinks that it might be one of those things where he thinks that because he was hurt, his market might not quite be there.
That could be it.
You know, the other thing I would say also, Raj, is he had some off the court stuff. He had like a custody battle over his kids and stuff like that. And I think he won custody of his kids.
Yes.
And I feel as though like the mental security, stability, whatever, of just opting in, knowing that you have the money on the books, not going to the free agent markets and risking, you know, having to move somewhere else and, you know, whatever the situation is, it is what it is. So I didn't think anything more than that. It's good for the Lakers if we want to keep him. He's still a talented player when he's healthy. He can still help out. He's a legit big, floor spacing big. Not the type of big that we probably want for a Nikola Jokic type, but he is a long AD light kind of
replacement. Yeah, I think he just also bought his parents a house, right? I think here. I think that was in California, if I have that right. And so maybe there were some stability options. Yeah, maybe he was hurt. The Lakers were kind of his, you know, they have those like credit repair places. Like the Lakers are kind of his reputation repair place. And
yeah,
maybe he just doesn't feel finished with that. I could see that. It's just guys like him and guys like Cam Reddish, in my opinion, are always going to get a shot somewhere. So why not pick your location? And maybe the Lakers just have kind of told him that he's a guy that, you know, they'll keep on to next year, or he's at least part of their plans if no deal kind of commences. I thought he had an okay year, Vinay. Like, I thought Christian Wood was okay. I thought, like, he kind of played to what I thought he would be. There were moments where he showed some defensive versatility that I think people didn't know about. There were moments where his rebounding really was effective. Those in-season tournament games against Phoenix, where he was able to lock up Kevin Durant. Or not lock up, but at least move his feet with KD and kind of stay in front of him and be able to attack him on switches on the other end and play next to AD as that four. When he was healthy, he actually had the rotation spot over Jackson Hayes to start there. I like that he's back. I'm just interested to see if he can come back with a little bit more defensive fortitude, play a little stronger in the post. We'll see where... we'll see if the next coach kind of feels the same way with Christian Wood, but I thought he had a fine year. I don't think Christian Wood kind of regressed in terms of the basketball talent, but yeah, to your point, there's off the court stuff. I don't know if this was real or not, but I guess like after he won the custody battle, like I guess the woman posted some strange thing online about, you know, being happy about, like, I don't know. Maybe there was just some mental stuff that he was going through that could have played into it. So hopefully like he's better next year. I do think like at the minimum, he's still a player. We always talk about it, right? Players need to outkick their coverage in terms of their contract. And Christian Wood falls under that. He's making the minimum next year and he has the talent to kind of outkick that. I was shocked that he opted in for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that was definitely a surprise that he opted in. You know, whatever the reason is, he's still a capable player on a veteran minimum contract, which I think we could both say when healthy, that's a pretty great value contract to have. And we'll see what happens, you know, when the Lakers include him, you know, in a deal, or if he ends up playing a role. I think he does have a role with this roster. I don't think it's necessarily something where we have to get rid of him. It's almost one of those things where it's like if you had to give him a grade at the end of the season, it's kind of like just an incomplete. Because he just didn't see enough of him to be able to be like, okay, we know what we can get out of him, what we can't get out of him. So I'll be very curious to see what happens with that. And then this one was the other player option situation, which was with D'Lo. It was reported that he was going to opt out of his player option. So I don't want to go full bore into it because it's still hypothetical. You know, you and I both heard behind the scenes that him opting out is not a guarantee. Him opting in is not a guarantee. There is an avenue where, you know, he might want to sign and trade, get himself signed and traded to a specific team of destination. But just off the top of my head, like D'Lo opting out and just leaving for nothing would be, I don't want to use the word catastrophic because it's very dramatic, but that would be right. You would put that right. You know, if we have the little ledger of good and bad things that the front office has done, this would definitely go into the list of bad things that the front office does if he ends up leaving for nothing in return.
I would use the word catastrophic. I would use it pretty freely there. And I don't know what you think about this, but I think it's better to just like this. I haven't tweeted this because I don't want the reaction to come with this, but I would think it's better to re-sign him than let him walk for nothing. And I always make this point. You can't trick him. There's no, you know, opt in D'Lo and we'll keep you and then you trade him somewhere. That's not how the NBA works. That's not how relationships work. That's not how these bridges are created. So you got to kind of smooth the relationship over. You have to kind of smooth the conversation. D'Lo feels some type of way. And I think if you listen to him talk, he wants to feel appreciated. At least that's what I get from him. He wants to be on a place that he's appreciated and for what he does. So I think you kind of have to find a team that feels that way and D'Lo's comfortable going there in a sign and trade in that case. So it's a tricky situation. they kind of put themselves here by not moving him at the deadline. This is the doors you open up that he can walk out that front door and go somewhere. But his number is 18 million. I think that's going to be tough to find in the open. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too optimistic. I just think that's a tough number to reach in a league that's prioritizing more and more defense and stuff like that, especially how the playoffs are playing out. I don't know. Am I being, just wrong in that assessment in terms of his market? People have mentioned Orlando. I just don't think Orlando's trading their defensive identity for D'Angelo Russell. I think they want to build on that and bring shooters that kind of walk their ethos. And just D'Lo doesn't take me as a guy for that. And also, I think they still want Paolo and Franz kind of eating up the possessions. Just on that point with D'Lo, do you see that in terms of, or do you see his market kind of being wider with the teams that are available for him?
Yeah, so I think the cap space teams are just, there's a limitation, obviously, because there's not that many cap space teams, and there's a lot of teams that are trying to get a little bit lower than sort of that second apron threshold. So I think his trade market is probably a little bit better. It's strange because you know what D'Lo is. You know what D'Lo is as a playoff performer, and you know what he is. He's a guy who can get hot and win you a game, but he's also a guy who can play 40 minutes and not do anything to help you win a game. So I think you've said it once before, sometimes his floor is too low, and his highs, you want a steady floor, and he has to be able to do the other stuff that allows us to, that allows his floor to be higher. So we always talk about defense or rebounding or something else outside of just shooting the basketball that we need out of him. So I'm going to be very curious to see what his actual value is. I could argue that $18 million is a value deal for a guy like D'Lo. I can make that argument because he is a quality creator. He can run the pick and roll. He's not a dumb guy. It's not like he's going out there just throwing the ball away. I think he's a high IQ player. I think the irrational confidence is worth something because that is the difference between beating the Bucks without LeBron and not beating the Bucks without LeBron in the regular season. So I think 18 is right. I think the conversation gets a little sticky once we get to 25 million plus because it's I don't know what we could do with that. And D'Lo is relatively healthy for us this season too as well. That's been a knock on him for a couple of years now. He only gets to about 50 games a year. And then last season, he played a ton of games too as well. So if he wanted to come back for 20 million a year, would I be like, no, we can't bring him back? No, I think that's a good number to bring him back at. I think if it gets too high, that becomes a little bit difficult. But basketball is a business. He might feel that he's worth more than that because of what the market says. So that's what the Lakers have to figure out.
Yeah, last thing on that, I could totally see another just one, one plus one type of thing. He gets his guaranteed, gives the Lakers another half year to move him if they want and just keep the asset or, keep the player. It's still a productive player much as, the playoffs have kind of revealed the side that we, dislike the most. There's still 82 games you got to get through, those are real things. And inning eaters is a correct term for it. I see that in chat as well in terms of D'Lo, which I could see him coming back for that. I would use the word catastrophic. If you let D'Lo walk, that's just, I think that's, it's too many, trips over the same line kind of thing that continues to happen. So you can't let that number walk out the door.
Is there a number that you wouldn't sign him that he asked for? Is there a number where you'd be like, all right, you know what? And it has to be fair, it has to be a number that you don't think anybody's going to trade for him for either.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. What do you think? Yeah. It depends what's coming in for us, right? I think if you can kind of pull off, the star deal or whatever, and you're able to upgrade that way, and then I think 25 million is probably high. I think the number goes up the less years it is, right, Vinay? If it's year, short-term deal, let's say he opts out, but he signs for 20, 25 million for a year plus one on a team option. That's something I would kind of be for. Most people I think are ready to just, I say this a lot, but most people are just ready to throw the whole ship over the water. And
yeah, for sure.
They're ready to, and D'Lo's part of that. Just throw everything off, you know, out of the water. And I'm not there. I think he had a fine year. Obviously, the playoffs continue to reveal things you don't like, but I just letting that player walk for nothing. I would use your term, catastrophic for that.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't think D'Lo is in this situation. I don't think the Lakers are in a situation where, you know, obviously he had the thing he said at the exit interview where he said he's going to exercise what leverage he does have. I don't think this is one of those things where it's like they're at a standoff. I think the Lakers, if D'Lo doesn't want to be in LA or if he doesn't like the money that the LA has to offer, they can't come to. I think the Lakers are going to offer to sign and trade him to the team that he wants to go to if they don't have it.
By the way, like, I do not want to hear you want to exercise your leverage right after you lose game five. Yeah. Like, can that wait just a little bit? Like, hours after you get sent home, we're talking about I'm going to exercise my leverage. Those are things that I just maybe it's just the basketball purist in me, Vinay. I don't want to hear
read this comment. He says he's also besties with Reeves, and there's been video they're going golfing together and stuff like that. And I think there's a quote that came out. Yeah, where Reeves said that he wants to do anything possible to get him to stay in LA.
Yes.
I don't think that's gonna happen. If the Lakers don't want to keep him, I don't think Reeves' sentiment is going to matter. And so I saw that. I was like, that's really nice, but there's a basketball problem here, dude. Like, you guys are not as defensively sound as we'd like you guys to be. So, like, we have to figure it out, like, how we're going to make both of you guys work. And neither of you is going to go to the bench. You know, I don't think the Lakers want to send Austin to the bench as a sixth man unless there's, like, a clear, better player that has, like, you know, like a vet guy that plays over him. So,
yeah, that's probably the issue. I was watching Denver, Minnesota today, and Reggie Jackson comes in, Vinay, and just gives an 8 points right away, right? Two threes, gets to the rim, hits a floater. I was like, that's kind of what we want the D'Lo role to be, except you can't bring D'Lo off the bench because he makes $18 million. So, like, you're just in terms of the resources you have to build out a team. But that's probably means you have a really good team if D'Angelo Russell's you're off, like, running your second unit type thing, right? Like, if you're building your team out and forget the money, just put the money to the side for a second. You're building a team, you have a starting five. You're like, yeah, D'Angelo Russell's my backup point guard. You have a really good team. Problem is, that's probably not what the market dictates for a guy who's as talented as he is. And that's the kind of conundrum that you're in. But no, they are best friends. They do like each other a lot, which I think is great. Like, I think that's a fine thing for their relationship to be that way. But
I could already hear that subsection of the Lakers fan base saying, package them together and ship them out. Let's get them out of here and do it. But we'll see what happens. So that, you know, that kind of covers, I think, some of the player options or just the small transactions that have happened with the Lakers. And we should talk, segue here into just kind of the coaching candidates that are now kind of available. And I think a lot of folks have done, or some of the folks on Laker Twitter, the creators on Laker Twitter, that's what I'm going to call them, have done their analysis on, like, what our coaches, which coach would be good, which coach wouldn't be good, that sort of thing with the names that have been available. So I just want to quickly riff on the two guys that we didn't hire, Mike Budenholzer and Charles Lee. I don't know why anybody thought Mike Budenholzer should be a replacement for Darvin Ham. Darvin Ham learned everything he learned from Mike Budenholzer. So I'm just going to assume that some people just didn't realize that a lot of the stuff that Ham kind of did schematically, he brought from the drop coverage, stuff like that, something that Budenholzer done. Maybe Budenholzer is a little bit more of an adjustments coach, but from the Bucks folks that I know, the Atlanta folks that I know, yeah, they've all said the same thing. All the same stuff that you saw with the Lakers were the same issues that we had with Budenholzer. Didn't call timeouts fast enough, would stick to the drop coverage and never deviate from it, and they would lose games because they get torched from three. Charles Lee, you know, he's also an assistant for Budenholzer. I don't know if he's going to run the same thing that he's going to run. And, you know, when he's over in Charlotte, he might be a little bit more different. But, again,
it's in Boston,
a lot of
right?
times Apple Charles doesn't – Charles Lee. Did he go to Boston after?
So he's under the Boston tree. Currently, yeah.
And so and then now I think he's gonna be the head coach of Charlotte. So it's gonna be interesting to see just kind of how it works out. But just for those two coaches, I was just like, okay, we should be aware of like what the lineage is here before we go in that direction. But Budenholzer's now with Phoenix. I don't know what's going to happen there, but right now we're not Suns fans, so we won't discuss that. And good luck to Lee. So we have a couple names that are left over people have been discussing. Obviously, the most obvious one, the one that has drawn the has now actually become a lightning rod for the Lakers versus LeBron fans because of his relationship with JJ on the podcast. JJ Redick has become this coaching candidate where it's been kind of funny to watch the timeline try to get ahead of who's going to be at fault for if the Lakers season fails without knowing even who our head coach is going to be. They've been doing that with JJ. And I get it. You know, it's a thing that's always going to happen, but JJ has been the most popular name that's come out. Kenny Atkinson has also been rumored. James Borrego was rumored, the assistant coach for Minnesota. Mike Anori was rumored. Denver's assistant coach, Rick Adelman's son, David Adelman, has also been rumored. Yep. I think some of those other names, the Adelman and Nori, they can't be interviewed yet, so we haven't really gotten much insight in regards to them because they're in the middle of playoff series themselves. But it sounds like Borrego and JJ Redick are the ones that are continuing to be vetted, continually being vetted. Let's just put the other guys to the side. Let's just talk about JJ for a second because I think that is an important conversation that we need to have.
I think we disagree on this. So I think this is good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So JJ, veteran basketball player, great role player, smart guy, sounds very smart, does a podcast with LeBron, was on ESPN doing analysis. There is this idea that JJ can be like, can make that transition like Steve Kerr did from TV, from media to being the Lakers head coach. Him being a candidate, the Lakers job was not the only candidate he was. He was also linked to the Charlotte job too as well. And then the Lakers job is the only other job that I think we've heard. He wasn't linked to the Phoenix job at all, which was a little bit of a surprise. So naturally, because of the podcast that he does with LeBron, the assumption is that LeBron is the person that's pushing for this. And as always, without fail, Brian Windhorst comes out and says, LeBron doesn't have any influence on coaching hire. He does. I actually believe, I don't think LeBron has influence on the coach. Like, I don't think LeBron is the guy that goes and vets all the coaches, asks them about their strategies, all that stuff. I don't think he's involved in that process. But is it possible that maybe LeBron suggested that the Lakers interview JJ Redick? I think that's very possible. I think that's very normal. I think a lot of superstar players do that. I had heard about, when Steve Nash got fired, there was an internal push by some of the players on the Brooklyn Nets to get Ime Udoka, who had been dismissed because of some issues, front office, off the court issues in Boston. There was a push for that shaky situation in the Nets. The owner decided not to go in that direction. They go with like Jacques Vaughn, and now that team's completely dismantled from what it used to be. Similar thing. If your superstars want you to interview a specific type of coach because they have good rapport with them, we started off by saying you gotta have buy-in from the locker room. You gotta have buy-in from the superstars. The Lakers are going to consider talking to that guy. Where are you at with this? This thing? This JJ Redick potentially being our head coach.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I try to say this as much as I can. I think you really just don't know with coaches, right? You really don't until they're in the room, until they're in that position. Even a retread coach, you really don't know until they're in the room and they have the expectation that you have with, LeBron James, that you have with Anthony Davis on the team, LeBron at his age. JJ is interesting to me, Vinay, because number one, I have no questions about JJ's basketball acumen. I have no questions about that. I have no questions on his ability to call plays. I think he's as close to the modern game as you can be, right? He's out of the league for 3 years. I think his concepts are going to be modern. And he also just, again, you don't know a person by listening to their podcast, but JJ just doesn't only do podcasts. He has been on the ESPN route. He's been so dominant on the ESPN route. He took Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson's job. JJ Redick has built a media empire. And I don't use the word empire loosely. I think JJ has absolutely built a media empire with Old Man and the Three and the, you know, other podcasts that he kind of promotes and is on as a guest. The question is, what are you doing next year? You are, in my opinion, LeBron's going to be resigned at a, we don't have to talk about that on this show, but I think he's going to sign the 2-3 year extension. So the next coach, number one, has to have LeBron's buy-in. I think you get that right away with JJ. And again, this is not me promoting for JJ Redick. I can see the logic of it. And do I want LeBron James and my head coach to be best friends? Probably not. Like that's probably not the place that I want, you know? I'm not sure if that's the relationship that I'd want our coach to have. Like, I'm not sure the accountability that he can push, but I think you get buy-in right away from LeBron. And I don't know if their podcast will continue under this realm. I think AD is more apathetic to the coaches. So I just don't think AD has that strong of an opinion on this type of stuff.
Can I add some context Ron is going to be in extension talks, and mm-hmm. I don't think it's unfair to say that if Ron wants JJ to be seriously considered as a head coach, the Lakers will consider it. That doesn't mean that Bron is the reason why JJ gets hired. The Lakers front office is responsible for signing off on the last thing, you know, like doing the due diligence and figuring it out. But I don't think we should be like oblivious to the fact that a superstar can hang those extension talks over a front office to get something. I'm not saying he's going to force it, but I think there's a little bit of a layer into that, you know, like if Rob goes and Jeannie go to LeBron and say, hey, look, we want you back. What's the contract amounts? What do you want to do? I don't think Bron's just going there and saying, okay, give me 3 years at the max and I'll sign it and I'll see you later. I don't think it works that way. I just want to bring that up because you kind of mentioned it in a nice way. So I just want to be a little bit more straightforward and say, hey, look, he's going into extension talks. He's going to ask about, what kind of players can we move? What kind of players can we bring in? What's the coaching going to look like? If it's for 3 years, I have to deal with this guy for 3 years. I want it to be somebody I get along with. These are all good reasonable point. Conversations to have in extension talks. That's why I interrupted you.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, no, you're good. I think that's a valid point to kind of bring up there. And again, like that's not the perfect relationship. It's just that these are unprecedented times. Right. There's never been a player who's played this long. LeBron's going to year 22, I believe, right? If I have that right, going into his year 40 season. There's just different roadmaps that you have to attack. And I think at least him and JJ can have a basketball conversation and have a mutual basketball meeting where we're not in the conversation with Darvin Ham. But obviously there was some divide somewhere. There was a divide with him and Ham. And maybe that's where if you can get JJ Redick some top tier assistance, which that's the only way this would work. And you can have the personality management, the locker room management, the political locker room management, right? All the politics that go along with coaching. Because I think JJ is a meticulous guy. I think he's a hardworking guy. He seems very detail oriented, right? I think these are all things that are qualities you have to kind of build the empire he's had to play, you know, to build this after he's played. I think those are important. And, you know, Shell asked a good question. Can he hold LeBron James and AD accountable? Probably not. But I make this app comparison as well. Can Mika Nori, right, who's another Mika Nori, mm-hmm. who's with the Timberwolves right now. First time head coach he would be if he got hired here with the Lakers. Vinay, you bring this up all the time. Let's say it's game 32 in the regular season. LeBron, for some reason, just doesn't get back on defense. Is Mike Conley going up to LeBron James and say, hey, man, great point. You got to get back? Yeah. I don't know. Is David Adelman, young guy, I believe he's 42, if I have that correctly. Is he going up to LeBron James? Say, LeBron, you need to make your low man rotation there. It's like, what? Like, right. And the Lakers are like 500, right? I'm just putting out scenarios there where I think that conversation is hard no matter who gets in that room. Maybe Kenny Atkinson has a little bit more voice in that type of things. I don't really think he does, but that's a reasoning that you can make for him. I just like I see the JJ thing, and I get it's a risk for sure. Steve Kerr is not only one of the examples, he's also like an anomaly. Like that's just, mm-hmm. those are rare. Steve Kerr also inherited prime Steph, you know, like, so those are like, yeah. those, it's just, it's a different kind of avenue that you kind of walk. But I guess my long soliloquy here, Vinay, is to like point out there's no good real candidates. Like there's no one that excites me. That's just, yeah. if they hired David, like Kenny Atkinson, would you be jumping up for joy? Like, I that's not something that really excites me. David Ottman's cool. Like, I think he's an awesome up and coming name. I think also is Mike Anori. It's just, those are, you have no idea. And I think the risk is there with all of those. JJ at least gets you in the front in terms of respect is the wrong way to go about it. The buy-in from LeBron, which is kind of the whole thing next season. So yeah, no, I riffed a long time there. You like talk to me. Where are you at with JJ and the idea of him being our next new head coach at like, I think he's like 38, Vinay. Like I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I think old JJ. Yeah, he's pretty close in age to Bron. I want to say
he's 39. Young, yeah, okay. Same age as
slightly yeah. older. Yeah, same year. Yeah. So okay. So you were right. You and I have very different opinions on JJ. So this is going to be certainly be one of those topics where I'm pretty sure the timeline is going to be upset with me, and maybe or they might be upset with you, which rare, but you know, they'll probably be upset with me, my delivery or whatever it is, they just don't like it. I don't like the idea of JJ. I understand he comes off very well. I think he's very media trained for sure. So I think one of the issues that we had with him is he would just kind of go up there and say some stuff that I'd be like, what? Like, why are you saying that? Like, don't say that, you know, that sort of thing. So I think instantly, I think JJ understands how to PR. Deal with the LA media circus, which is a problem because LA media folks need the soundbite. Like they're it's an engagement business. So they're going to try and fish for it. And I think JJ being a player in recent history knows what that's like. He played next to Dwight also, I think. So like he kind of knows the hoopla that can come with having, you know, playing next
he's to very aware.
Yeah, very aware of stuff like that. So I think that's an instant benefit. I can't get into the X's and O's stuff with him because I don't have anything to measure it against. You know what I mean? Like so that's why I can't really knock him for that. The reason why I'm not for the idea of JJ is because you're not fixing any of the stuff that you had an issue with before. Meaning you brought Vogel on. He wasn't your first choice. You won a championship. Then you let him go. Then you bring Darvin Ham because you needed somebody to corral the Westbrook situation until you guys could find a trade for him. He did that job correctly, admirably, did his best to do that. Helps lead you to the Western Conference Finals 1 year later. You know, they don't make it to the Western Conference Finals or make a deep run, whatever it is. And you end up letting him go. So my thing is that the baseline as a fan, I'm saying this as a fan, as nothing else. Okay. The baseline as a fan is JJ's got to get to the second round at least to make any season seem successful. You can't be a play-in team because we saw that happen with Ham. And that's not acceptable because JJ has to be better than him in that regards. You can't be like a horrendous defensive team by the end of the year because the second half of the season, they completely gave up on playing defense. You can't get knocked down in the first round because if that was the case, we could have just kept Ham and dealt with that situation. I know Ham got fired because he lost the locker room. I'm just from a basketball perspective.
Sure.
So it's like, I can make the argument that if JJ is not good enough to get you, if you don't feel confident that JJ is good enough to get you to the Western Conference Finals, as is, then you have to think twice about it. And I'm not sure if I'm there yet. But I will give you this, Raj. I will give you this. I don't think the head coach for this Lakers team, okay? I'm saying this is my nicest way of saying it. I don't think the head coach for this Lakers team with LeBron and Anthony Davis as the two star players matters as much compared to if we had a team of like a lot of young guys, like a team like the New Orleans Pelicans, like a team that doesn't have two stars that are very clear vets that know how to win. The one thing that always stands out to me at the end of these exit interviews is LeBron sitting up there with Anthony Davis saying, "We know what it takes to get to the mountaintop." He keeps saying it over and over again. We've done it before. Sure. We know what it takes. We know what it takes. We know what it takes. So my thing is, if your stars feel that way, I don't know if the coach is going to be the difference. do you call timeouts on time, play the right guys, the lineups? That's for sure, 100%. That stuff can all lead to incremental improvement. But I think in the long run, what the roster looks like and how our stars perform and role players perform will be more important than who the hire is. Is that a fair? Is that too much? Is that because my thing is my concern is this, Raj. The fan base, portions of the fan base, all of the fan base, whatever percentage, put everything on him, everything. And sure. They said any other coach we put in this position, we're getting at least 10 more wins or whatever it's supposed to be. That's a lot. That's not easy to do. But you and I both watched those games, and it wasn't about the coaching. Sometimes it was just they didn't show up, and our stars didn't show up, or they didn't want to show up on the back-to-back or whatever it is. My question is, does J.J. Redick get those guys to play harder in those games? And if the answer is not yes, I don't know if we had almost 50 wins, Raj. Almost 50 wins. Like, I don't know how much more you're extracting, at least in the regular season. You talk me off that ledge. Yeah. Convince me to come to your side.
Yeah. I want to like bring on one of the points that you started with was you have the X's and O's part of it, right? That you have nothing to compare it to. I guess the only thing I have to compare it to, and what I think everyone has to compare it to, is I don't think LeBron is sitting down with someone he doesn't at least respect their basketball acumen, right? LeBron is sitting there diagramming plays with this dude for an hour a week. And like, you can put as much stock into that as you want. At least I go to the bar of J.J. Redick has enough basketball, you know, acumen and, you know, respect and IQ that LeBron James chose him. LeBron could have chose anyone he wanted, right? And look, LeBron chose JJ because he built a basketball empire. That's part of why LeBron is sitting with him every single week. The other issue, Vinay, is you're totally right. Like, there's like the players 100% matter in the buy-in, but you don't have a good answer anywhere in that. Like, there's no coach you're getting a for sure answer with that, right? Like, you brought up the names, Kenny Atkinson, James Borrego, David Adelman, Micah Nord. Like, these are probably very smart dudes who've done their time as assistants, who've done their time in that chair. Do they have a better chance of connecting with LeBron James? I don't know. I think the guy that sits with him every week, that they probably have meetings, they probably have production meetings, they probably have phone call possession, they're probably texting, they're probably drinking wine on weekends. Again, these aren't the 1+1 doesn't equal 2. That, like, because this is happening does not mean J.J. Redick will be a good coach, right? Like, those aren't the numbers that I'm adding up here. I'm just saying I wouldn't hate it. Like, if J.J. Redick's hired and we have good assistants, I would understand it. And I think that, like, can you at least get here that are your concerns with J.J.? Do any of your concerns with J.J. have to go in the basketball court? Like the X and O's, the concepts that he would bring in terms of and being able to kind of run a team and I guess just get a team running his system. Do you have any concerns there, or is it all pretty much the people skills that you have with JJ?
So I think the people skills are fine. The on-court stuff I am concerned about is something that you alluded to. Is he might be too much of a friend with LeBron to keep him accountable.
And I think that's fair.
I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm a little worried about that. Like, if there's one thing you could check off that I think won't happen if J.J. Redick gets hired, is LeBron's not going to do any passive aggressive stuff against J.J. because they're friends. You know what I'm saying?
Explain that. What do you mean?
Meaning that, like, there's always been this speculation with him, and even to some degree with Vogel too as well, that, like, LeBron would passive aggressively talk about the coach not being good at what he was doing. You know, Twitter will do its thing. The Bron section of the Lakers fan base will do its thing with the body language stuff that they do with the video. But Bron has openly said some stuff in a very careful way. Like, it's not like he was going out of his way to be like, no, we have a good coach, dude. You guys need to chill out. Like, that's, I think he did the thing on Instagram where he was like telling people, he was like, no, like, we were communicating something else. You guys are completely misinterpreting what's happening with this situation. But there was sentiment. I don't even have to speculate. Like, I've had people tell me, around the organization, that Bron has felt some type of way about Darvin Ham's IQ as a coach, like his X's and O's and ability, and not in a negative way, but like, hey, maybe he's not quite where we need to be in order for us to be successful as a team. Not in a denigrating way, but just, you know, if a guy can't jump that high and you say he can't really jump that high, you're not insulting the guy. You're just kind of talking about the reality of the situation. I don't think you get that issue with JJ. I think because JJ has that kind of X's and O's conversation with LeBron, we see that dynamic play out in scripted form with the podcast.
Sure.
I think that open dialogue can exist with LeBron and JJ. The double-edged sword of that is I think JJ will also – like one of the things that people used to get angry at Ham for is he used to have like these very generic things that he would say as to why the Lakers lost, right? Like we'd get blown out by the Kings and play no defense whatsoever. Our stars would just lead on like Sabonis is just running over AD. LeBron doesn't want to chase down Harrison Barnes on open threes. And they get mad at Ham and they go to Ham, they all turn to Ham. Well, why did you guys lose? We gotta play with more force. Toughness. We gotta we gotta be tough. We gotta have more energy. And our fan base would kill him for it. They'd be like, oh, idiot, he's running drop coverage, doesn't even know he's not running the offensive run rates or blah blah blah. But if you watch the game, you're like, our stars are not even trying. We're gonna lose this game if they start. I don't know if that changes. Like, I don't know if JJ's gonna go up there and be like, yeah, you know what, our stars didn't show up tonight. Oh, you know what? Our team really didn't show up tonight. They have to be better. Like, this is not possible. Because we know what happens, right? When that comment comes out, who grabs it? LA media grabs it, takes it to LeBron or takes it to AD at a practice thing and says, what do you think about this? You know, your coach said that you guys didn't do it. I don't know if that happens. I think they probably talk more. A guy like Bron and AD would be more communicate with JJ more. That would probably be less. And also, you know, JJ is smart. He won't say stuff like that probably because he doesn't want to put a spotlight. But does it fix the issue? That's my question to you. Well, does that stop? Does the accountability increase with JJ Redick or maybe with any coach in that position?
That's where I was going, right? And I think we forget when Darvin Ham was hired. He's hired as a player coach.
Yes.
He was hired as being tough. He was hired as keeping dudes accountable, right? Because every time this happens, Vinay, right? You fire one coach, you get one that's the antithesis of that last coach, right? Mm-hmm. So Frank Vogel, not really a galvanizer of men, right? Not really a very vocal leader. But Vogel was more just smart and I do my everyday work and we're going to work through it that way, right? Darvin Ham, lead opposite. Rob Pelinka, right on the front of it. No, we needed a leader. You know, we needed someone who can, you know, bring us together. Remember those type of words that were being used, right? So like these are the kind of type of things that were being used. Well, none of that worked anyway. I mean, it worked in the second half of last season, but I think we forget that a lot of the team was injured and obviously they flipped the roster in terms of getting more talent at the deadline. So I just don't think there's a real answer here for that. And I think at least JJ would start with a head start of like Shell is asking here, I saw, do you want to build a culture beyond LeBron or do you want to coach for LeBron's tenure?
That's a great question.
Right. Yeah. And so I think the point with this is I think this team next year is still a culture that needs to have LeBron in the middle of it. And I think if you get LeBron's buy-in, then you get the team's buy-in by just by connectivity. So that's why, like, again, none of these hires are extremely exciting. None of them are out of risk. There's no Eric Spoelstra on the market that I know of. There's no Phil Jackson on the market that I know of, right? And so all these coaches come with questions. People like Mike Anori and David Adelman are great. I'm sure they've done their time. But every coach, if you talk to them, say a lot of stuff changes when you move over one chair. You do. The head assistant going to the head coach, a lot changes. A lot of responsibilities change. You go from not speaking to the media at halftime where no one sees you to every single day post-game and every single pregame, right? And every single ESPN national TV game, you're speaking to the media in the first quarter or the fourth quarter. Like those things kind of change your responsibility. So I don't think there's a great answer here is why I see the JJ element. I think at least it would be something that's a little bit more, I guess, exciting. There's some risk to it, but I don't question the basketball mind, Vinay. I question the ability to handle people because going from a player where your job is to play, and obviously there's other things that go along with that, but your job is to play, and then going to the media space, right? And then jumping right from that into being responsible for a team. You're the face of a franchise. You're one of the faces of the franchise. The head coach, the star players, those are faces of your franchise. Yeah. They're the heads. They're the head of the snake in a lot of cases. Is JJ ready for that? I don't know. But there's a lot of people I don't know about.
I think that's fair. I think the field of people the field of candidates that we have to select from is also allowing JJ to be a candidate. Like if we had like I don't know, like three different Phil Jacksons available. I don't think JJ would be a candidate, but I think just because of the nature of the field looks like right now, that's sort of the situation that we're in. And like I said, I'm not completely against the JJ idea. Like I have a lot of hesitation about it because I don't know if it resolves, like, you know, it might resolve the locker room thing or whatever, but like, again, you bring it up, like, Ham was also a former player too. Like, I don't think he was going into the locker room and just like, you know, killing guys. He's like, hey, we'll go see what happened in the film room and then go fix what we, figure out what we did wrong in the film room and stuff like that. He was a player coach, like you said. So it's just whoever's in the position, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, I think Darvin probably leaned too far into that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Sure. Like, I think he just went too far in that narrative. He obviously tried to pump up Cam Reddish, had some affinity to Taurean Prince, and that was probably his downfall. Like, he really believed in this, I'm going to stay with you. I'm going to ride or die with you, right? And there are a lot of deaths going on. There's a lot of just dying with the player that was occurring. So I think that was kind of his downfall. And that probably led to him being lost. But yeah, like, and again, we never know with JJ. You don't know with these other coaches. I think that was Darvin's kind of, and again, this was Darvin's first time head coach as well. And I bring this up a lot, Vinay, how many coaches make the Western Conference Finals? Right. And the next season they lose to defending champs.
Yeah.
And they're kicked out. And he made a lot of mistakes. I get that. Like, I think it's when you frame it just the results based, it's a unique situation. And so I feel like we're going to be flipping coaches. If that's the bar that you need to reach, you made this point, JJ has to get to the second round. You know how hard it is to get to the second round, like in the Western Conference, you know how hard it is to not become a play-in team in the Western Conference. Like, the West is really good. Memphis is going to be good next year. They're getting Ja back. The Spurs are going to at least try to win next year. Houston won 41 games. They get the number 3 pick this season. Like, and none of the teams in the West are falling off. And like that, I see Phoenix might be better, might be worse. Who knows? It's just the West is tough. So if you're like bar to reach is Western Conference Finals, you're going to be firing a lot of coaches. A lot of coaches are going to be going by the wayside. So I interrupted you there, but keep
going. No. Those are really all the thoughts I had about JJ. Like, I mean, I have more, what's the right word? I have very candid thoughts about JJ too, as it ties into this Bron extension. But it'll come off, people won't like what I have to say. So we'll refrain from going in that direction right now. But I think JJ is an actual serious candidate for this position. And I do think a big part of it is his ability to talk to folks, both inside the locker room and outside the locker room, and, you know, kind of how he carries himself as a coach too, in the public eye. For me, that stuff doesn't matter. It's important, especially the locker room stuff, that matters a lot. But for me, it's just, look, I don't know how many more years we're going to have LeBron. The word is that it's going to be 2 to 3 years, most likely, that he's going to be there. This is probably going to be the coach that is going to be with LeBron until he retires. So it's not one of those things where it's just you're being the Lakers head coach. You're kind of the bookend, potentially, assuming LeBron doesn't play more than the 3 years, you're bookending the end of LeBron's career. I don't think, you know, like, if Bron wants to, if he's Bron's going to take that retirement season, you know, like, you can't get on Bron for stuff. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a part of, like, when Kobe signed it, the reason why I say this is because when Kobe signed that extension, that 2 year extension, it was not a good salary cap move. It was not a good competitive move. I don't think any Lakers fan would say. Sure. Genie positioned it as a reward to Kobe for 20 years of service for the Lakers, basically. And we kind of knew what it was. This is a very different situation because Bron wants to compete. He's openly said that he wants to continue competing. He wants to win a championship. He feels that he can still win a championship. The stats tell you that he can win a championship. And him and AD believe that they can. So this is not the same situation. He might abruptly retire. He might not really announce it too far in advance. We don't know what it is. We're just assuming because of his age, at some point he's going to retire. So it's a lot of pressure. It's not just LA media. It's not just being the Lakers head coach. It's not the fact that the two previous coaches before you have made the Western Conference Finals and won a championship prior to that. You're also coaching the greatest star in basketball ever. Through the end of his career, and if he's staying healthy and he's putting up numbers, you have to do things right. or else JJ's initial opportunity at a head coaching job might be his last opportunity as a head coaching job if it doesn't go well too as well. So it's a pretty loaded situation, I would say.
Yeah, and I just don't think JJ's leaving his – and I use the word – I keep using the empire because I think it's important. I think JJ feels that way because he's built it from scratch just in terms of what he's built. I don't think he's leaving that without getting full control of his assistants, right? Getting a long-term deal, getting maybe not job security, but getting contract security, right? He's going to get – and he wants a very lucrative deal. So those are all things I think JJ is going to be looking for. And are we handing that out? I don't know. But that was a lot on JJ. Vinay, there's these other candidates here. I just want to get your opinion.
Yeah, let's hit him.
Kenny Atkinson is obviously the most experienced head coach. Mm-hmm. The other ones are Mike Anori and David Adelman in Denver. Jason Kidd was mentioned. That's out because he got his extension. Ty Lue. Let's just keep Ty Lue to the side for now because that's such a – we'll see what the Clippers do with his extension.
Let me ask you a question. If Ty Lue doesn't get the extension, should the Lakers be at his doorstep like immediately as soon as that's announced, getting that signed and just blow off all the other interviews?
I would hope so. I think he's the best candidate on the if he became on the market, he'd be the best candidate on the market.
Yeah. And I'm with you. Yeah.
I think there's some mutual eyeing each other going on, just pretending each other are not looking at each other type of thing. But but I think there's some of that. But yeah, who do you like, I guess, in the names that have been rumored? James Borrego, Kenny Atkinson, David Adelman, and Mike Anori. Is there any guy, because you obviously said you're not in the JJ camp, where are you in the coaches that are available?
I would like Ty Lue, and then the second option I want is whoever LeBron wants to sign that extension. That's basically the I like Adelman, I like Nori, I like Atkinson. I'll say this. I think I've openly said a couple of times that like I want a guy that is going to figure out a way to play bigger. And so we can return to that identity of being a more physical and bigger team. That's the coach I would like. The only way that works is if our roster also matches that philosophy too as well. That has big physical guys that can, you know, protect the rim and swarm around below the 3-point line and stuff like that. So I think Adelman has done that with Denver. Nori has seen that also with Minnesota. Those are two candidates there where if that's the style of basketball they want to play in LA, I'm for it. I like that idea. Atkinson, I don't know if that's the style of basketball he likes to play. He's been over in Golden State. They do the split cut stuff, high post stuff. With two guards running around, I don't know if that's going to be a great situation. Lue seems to be able to adapt to any roster that he kind of gets and extracts a lot out of him. So that's kind of the – honestly, Raj, I don't have – like JJ, I don't know. I don't know what kind of basketball offense JJ would like to run.
Sure.
So that's a little bit of a wild card for me. So for me, honestly, Raj, I don't have a strong I need this guy, I need that guy. I think – whatever gets our stars to buy in to doing the stuff that we need them to do to win these games so that we're not 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th and fighting for our lives just to get into the playoffs, I think that's who I want. And if that means, you know, we got to ask our stars who they want, then that's just what it is. That's just how it works.
Yeah. For sure. And I think
somebody you have in mind? Somebody like you?
I think that's a good way to frame it. And I think I'm going to be blunt here. I think we know who one of our stars wants. Like, I don't think that's like a crazy thing to say. I think it's very clear. Like, again, what star player wouldn't want a coach they have an amazing relationship with? And again, this is what's so unique about this situation. There's just no player who plays this long and is as good as he is, as long as he's done it, that's able to be in this position, right? To be the same age as their coach, but still be the star of the team where you affect roster moves. That's just unheard of. That's just super unheard of. And obviously coaches' ages are also going down, right? They're like the coach younger of the year this year. Yeah. Is younger than LeBron James. I think Mark Daigneault is like 37, if I remember correctly, or 38, whatever he is. So like also this is a new era where coaches aren't 70, 75, you know, like these are a lot younger coaches that are,
I mean, and the players are young too. Like OKC is a young team. They're like all in their 20s. So a 37-year-old is like an ancient dude for that group of guys. Raj, let me play a game with you. We'll play a game. Bron comes up to you. You're Rob Pelinka. Bron comes up to you. And you come up to me and you said, Bron, what do you want? Let's get this extension out of the way. We want you to retire as a Laker. Bron comes up to you and says, okay, 3 years max. That's pretty easy. And the money's not an issue. Genie's already blank stamped that, whatever, signed off on that. And Bron comes up to you and says, but I'd also like J.J. Redick to be the head coach too as well for the same amount of time or more. You guys can figure out what the extension is going to look like. Mm-hmm. I want J.J. Redick to be the head coach. That's all I want. Those are the two things that I want, my extension amount and the head coach. How? Okay, you're going to say yes. I know you're going to say yes to that because you want Bron to stay. But how do you mitigate that? Because how do you account for JJ being a new head coach? Like, what is your next step after that? You don't have to consult with Bron.
Right.
We've already said yes to him. But what's your next step? What are the first things you're doing if JJ is going to be the hire?
I guess the next, I think, question that's important is, do we get to pick his assistants? Like, I think that's the next question. JJ would probably say no. Like, if you go up to JJ with that, but I think that would be the next point. Negotiating with your star about your coach is just awful process.
I'm just saying. That's what we're playing. Have you ever?
Awful process is a bad way to put it, but it's not a great picture. That is painted. But no, I think, like, and I don't know if this is as direct of what's going to happen. But I think, like, it would be wrong to just connect those dots. And again, I don't think LeBron is choosing the coach. I also know that LeBron isn't finding out who the coach is from Woj. So, like, 100%. So the coach, like, he's going to have some say in what goes on. If that's the only ask, honestly, like, I think that's an ask that they will fill pretty easily. Right. There's other ones that I'm sure are coming of what's the roster. Were you going to get, go get me this guy, go get me this. Like, I'm sure LeBron has a bar of players that he wants to play with, and
for sure,
you know, just an expectation of what talent will be along the ride with him, and kind of dangle whatever free agency he can to push the leverage up. That's just how negotiations work. But I think that's the next question, right? Who are his assistants? And I keep bringing this up. I don't think JJ is walking away from what he has without full
control,
autonomy, right? Like, in what he's doing. So that'd be an interesting kind of move. But I think the assistants are extremely important in this case of a first-time head coach. I think that it's vital you have a good assistant and a good staff around it, which I think the Lakers should be able to build. But yeah, it's a tough way. And hopefully your relationship is with your star isn't on a I do something for you, so you do something for me, right? Like, it's a really dark way to walk. Like, there should be collaboration. You should be rowing in the same direction. That's mm-hmm. what you'd hope. You want your GM, you want your star, and you want your coach all rowing the same boat. You don't want them rowing next to each other and be like, I'm going to stop your boat if you don't get me what I need on mine. Like, that, hopefully you're all on the same ship going forward. I know that's not how it always works, but yes, it's a tough way to go. But eventually, yeah, you got to say yes, right? Like, you need LeBron to sign. Now, there are things that probably the Lakers won't do. The money is one of them. I don't know how much they're paying JJ. Do they want to make him a $10 million coach before he's coached while paying Darvin Ham?
That might actually be something that works out in JJ's favor because he's a first-time head coach. If he's not demanding, because it's hard for a first-time head coach to demand. Like, in terms of all the other coaches that are available, there's no frame of reference as to, like, what he could command on the open market. You know what I mean? Like, there's no counter offer, or I used to get paid by this team this much money and I made it this far as a head coach, so I need at least this much money, you know, that sort of thing. And so that might be something that works in JJ's favor. Like, and it might actually kind of work in the Lakers' favor. Lakers might be like, oh, we don't have to pay this guy that much and we can get Bron to sign this extension. We might just do it. And like you said, if JJ is like, yeah, you can choose a couple of the assistants that I have, even better. The Lakers are probably like, okay, cool. Terry Stotts, come on down. So whoever else mm-hmm. they want to do for the defensive side, come on down. You know, they'll figure that stuff out. But I'm with you. Unless Ty Lue becomes available, I think we're just kind of, it's an open field. We'll just see what kind of happens and how things get decided. But Raj, there was some other news today that we should touch on. The draft lottery was today. Without much fanfare, at least until the actual results came in, the Atlanta Hawks, with a 3% chance to get the first overall pick in the NBA draft, managed to get the first overall pick. And you know, obviously everybody was like, the lottery is rigged because why does Atlanta get the first pick? But I mean, 3%, you know, hard opportunity, but they get it. But now there's a lot of conversation about Atlanta possibly jumpstarting a rebuild. And, you know, another piece of news that came out was that Trae Young left Clutch Sports and he went to CAA and he changed agencies, which, you know, a lot of times we like to draw the lines between the Lakers and Clutch Sports clients because yeah. We are, you know, a place for them to be when they don't have a place to go. And, you know, Trae has been mired in some difficult situations with Atlanta, and the word has been that Trae is on the block for Atlanta, and Atlanta is ready to flip the page and move in a different direction. I don't know how much the agency switch will be in regard to it, but Atlanta now has the first pick, and what everybody's saying is kind of a weak draft, but it might make them more inclined to move off of Trae. And there has been some conversation about the Lakers going after Trae. Lakers showed interest in Trae. Trae very clearly shows interest in the Lakers. Trae's dad shows a lot of interest in the Lakers because he likes everything that's about, you know, Trae going to LA, on Twitter at least. So where are you at? Like, what's going through your head when you hear that the Atlanta Hawks are the first pick overall? Trae looks like he's on his way out of Atlanta. We know what the salary cap situation is. We know how the second apron works, how limiting it can be and all that sort of stuff. Where are you at with going after a guy like him?
It's funny because a year ago, the NBA threw the lottery down our throats. Like, that was the amount of promo that had was insane.
We expanded to 2 days now, right? Isn't the draft coming up now? It's no longer a one-day draft. It's like two days of televised draft. Yes. So
the draft is, yes. Yeah. But I remember the lottery last year. It was the Wemby draft. Who's going to get Wemby, right? And who's going to get Scoot? It was the Wemby and Scoot draft. And it was, you know, promoted heavily. This year, did they do it in some dark room and just tell us? I didn't even see it on TV at all. Did not watch a bit of it. But no, yes, the Atlanta Hawks got the number one pick in what's advertised as maybe the worst draft in a very long time. To me, this is a gateway for Trae Young to go out. Like, usually that's how stars leave, is a number one pick gives a GM the license to kind of flip roads, right? You're on the street, you're driving one way, you're handed this get off the road card, and now the Atlanta Hawks can pull over and tell Trae Young, all right, here's your stop kind of thing. So I see that. I see this as an opportunity to move him. I just don't see as many teams just vying for Trae Young as others do. Vinay, I don't buy the Spurs angle. I really don't. I see that being pushed. I don't know if you do. I just don't buy it. I don't see it. I don't think the Spurs are in there. I don't think they're in that version of their rebuild where they want to give up multiple first-round picks while they still kind of find out what Wemby is. I think Wemby is still this unicorn, you know, NBA player that's learning to walk, quote-unquote, on NBA. He was incredible last year just in terms of what his ceiling is. I think they're still in that mode. I don't think they're in give-up-first-round pick modes of their rebuild. So you take them out. I was talking to our friend Rome. He's talking about New Orleans. I could see that. I could see, you know, I could see us. And that's basically, and maybe Miami is another team that could be rumored for him. But yeah, let's start with that. Are you with me on that? I think this is a gateway for Trae Young to just exit stage left. And you mentioned the agency change. Most players don't change agency to stay where they're at. That's just like
usually absolutely there's true,
some
yeah.
type of. Right, there's some type of hint of like where they just don't want the stability that they have there. They want to switch something up. But do you agree with that? Is this a gateway for Trae Young to kind of exit as the Atlanta Hawks?
Yeah, I think he's on his way out of there. I think Atlanta really wanted to trade him last year, but they couldn't really find. I think when we talked about it, Trae hasn't been the bad guy. Like he isn't like quitting in the middle of games and stuff like that. Like he tried to come back injured to play in the play-in games to help his team have a chance. You could argue that maybe that wasn't the right move because I don't think he played too well. And I think the fan base is probably done with the Trae Young experience. The coaching staff, the front office in Atlanta might be done with the Trae Young experience. You and I both said phenomenal offensive player, can create at a high level, can win you games off the strength of his ability to score the basketball and pass the basketball. So he's probably one of the best creators in the NBA. I think anywhere he lands, he'll be good. Him changing agencies does make me think that he's probably going to leave, or you know, get moved in a mutually beneficial kind of thing, not like a good riddance thing. But you and I have also talked with Rome included in the group chat that I don't think Trae Young's value will be any lower than it is right now. Like, this is the lowest you're probably going to get Trae Young. And the only thing that's really pushed me away from Trae, and you know I'm a big Trae fan, so is his salary. It's just, it's really, it's incredibly, it's damn near impossible to fit three $40 million max salaries underneath the second apron, which is what everybody, every team is trying to stay below because of how limiting it can be if you cross it. It's just really, really difficult to fit in a third guy. And you have to be damn near perfect on the margins. Yep. Not only that, every single player on the roster has to be able to play every single game. And even then, you have to get, you know, a level, a baseline level of production out of those guys every single night in order for that to be successful. So I think, would I like to trade for Trae? For sure. Do I think we can hit on the margins? And this is not a star power thing. This is a front office thing. Do I think we can hit on the margins well enough or to the level that we have to hit for us to be a top six team? Let's just not, forget top three, forget top four. Just make the playoffs and be a top one. I don't know. That's the biggest question mark. And obviously, we did the Russell Westbrook experience. I'm concerned that if one of our bigs, you know, one of the big three goes down like it did for the Suns, things can get shaky depending on who it is that goes down if we don't have any backfill for that player. So I think the draft lottery probably does help expedite some of this trade stuff for Trae. I just don't know if the Lakers will be involved in it the same way that they were before. Him not being clutch feels like he might have kind of fallen off the radar a little bit for the Lakers, or like kind of the priority of it has gone down a little bit. So I'll be very curious to see what happens. But Lakers won't pass up an opportunity to add talent if they can.
Yeah, I'm lower on Trae Young than you, and it feels like Trae Young's another very polarizing player, right? Just there's really no one on the middle of Trae Young. It's, you either really don't like his game, he either puts up fake stats, or he's either one of the best point guards to ever play. It's kind of a very tough kind of middle ground to kind of meet with him. And I think he's really good. I think he's an offensive engine. I just, watching the playoffs, Vinay, and you just brought up the second apron stuff. I think it's really tough when you have a player that's a liability on every possession defensively. Like, that's something that I have real concerns with. And I just think there's some depreciation of value when you're playing next to LeBron James, right? I think Trae Young's best suit is to run an offense. That's what he's best suited as. And I think LeBron's going to be running offense when it matters still next year. We'll see how that, we'll see how that looks. And you brought up how the coaching, the new coach doesn't really fix our issues, and I don't think Trae Young also fixes some of our just very core issues of LeBron and AD needing to be defensive masterclass players 82 games a year. That's something I would like to solve, and I think that problem gets a lot harder when you bring in Trae Young. So that's where I'm at with it. I would understand it. I think the talent upgrade is no doubt. I think that's very easy to see. I think Trae, again, is an incredible offensive engine, and I understand that he would absolutely help in the regular season. He would raise your floor to levels that Austin and D'Lo obviously just can't reach those heights. Trae's talent is off the boards, and those, the ability to hit shots off the dribble, very good in the floater range. We were missing a guard that can attack in that area, gets the rim, gets the line in ways that some people don't respect, but he does get to the line in a large fashion. It's just, I worry about the defense, but putting that aside, I think this makes him available. That's what this draft lottery does. It meets Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, for any case. They can kind of go in.
Did you see his tweet? You see, when Atlanta won that, when the first pick,
DeJounte? Be popcorn in the NBA playoffs. In the NBA summer. Yeah, it's interesting. I think DeJounte's been on the trade block, I'm assuming, since the last deadline. So he's a guy I'm sure they shopped around, and he had an awesome second half of the season. He had like 5 game winners, I think, to close the year out. No, it's interesting. DeJounte's the guy. If you can, I guess, give up less to grab, I would understand it. I just I think Atlanta's going to ask for a lot for either of them, so we'll see how that goes. It feels like Trae's a lot more available today than he was 2 days ago. Wow, 3% he jumped up. That's insane. Yeah.
If let's say Atlanta comes back to you and says, okay, we asked you for 3 firsts, Austin Reeves. Rui Hachimura, and we asked you for, I forget who it was, a Max Christie or something like that, right? So we asked you for those guys, for DeJounte Murray. And let's say they come back and they say, okay, you know what? We got the first overall pick. We need to get off of these guys. You send us two firsts, Max Christie, Austin Reeves. You figure out what the salary filler is going to be for the rest of the guys. Two-team deal, three-team deal. You figure it out. Rob Pelinka, you go figure it out. Do you make that trade? Two firsts. So it would be two firsts, Austin, for sure. Max. Oh, you can't trade Max because Max is a restricted free agent. So you can't even, he's not even involved.
Throw in JHS, I guess. Which,
okay, know, throw in JHS. Your guy, JHS. Yeah.
Sadly.
You have to send us those guys. Do you?
Who's this for?
This would be for DeJounte Murray.
Okay.
Do you make that trade? Do you go after DeJounte Murray again if they ask you for less picks to be sent out to them?
So, again, one of the only complaints people have had of me is Austin Reeves kind of stan, and I've given my points in terms of why I think he's more important. Look, if you're moving Austin, I would try to get a player that's better than DeJounte. Like, I think Austin's on such a steal of a contract that I feel like you can canvas the league and maybe canvas that same team, right? And if I'm giving up two firsts, Vinay, already, and Austin, that's my main package, right? I have three firsts to trade this summer, and I have Austin Reeves. I'm giving up two firsts and Austin for DeJounte Murray. I think if I'm going that route, then I'm just sliding one over the salary and going, bring me Trae Young in that case, right? I just think it's more worth that. But I don't know. Where are you at with that? What am I thinking on your page here? Or are you kind of like, that's at that one first round pick, and Rui still saves the deal for you to get to DeJounte?
I think if they came up to me and said, you don't have to send as many picks as you want, we'll take two firsts instead of three firsts. And you have to include JHS, who is basically a first.
Sure. So it's three firsts. Yeah.
So three firsts in the form of two. Yeah. I would work really, really hard to make a deal that doesn't include Austin in it. So if that's Rui, if that's signing and trading D'Lo to Brooklyn, which was what was not the sign and trade, but there was like the trade that was rumored at the deadline was D'Lo was going to go to Brooklyn. We were not going to send any picks to Brooklyn. Brooklyn wasn't asking for picks. The picks, the two or three firsts or whatever it was going to be, it was going to go to Atlanta. We were going to send D'Lo to Brooklyn. And I don't know what Brooklyn was going to send to Atlanta, but we were going to get DeJounte Murray. So there was a version of this that was supposed to happen at the deadline that did not go through for whatever reason. The Lakers didn't want to give up the extra picks or whatever it was that they didn't want to do. I would revisit that. I would go to Brooklyn and I would say, if I know that I can't get this situation worked out with D'Lo, I would say, hey, do you want to go back to Brooklyn? Brooklyn's going to be like, yeah, we still probably want him because we traded for this dude, Dennis Schroeder, and he can't even shoot the ball. I would ask him, what's it take to get D'Lo to Brooklyn for you? Offer those picks again for DeJounte Murray. You might not have to include Rui now in that situation. You might be able to land him if you give up more picks. If they're willing to take like Gabe Vincent or something like that in return. I would explore that before I'd explore. I think Trey's out because of his salary, but I would rather explore that than something else.
I guess the way I would frame it, Vinay, is if I'm trading three firsts, right, in this deal, whatever, however you accumulate that, I still think the basketball fit with DeJounte is just not clean enough for me to make that calculation, right? Like again, I think DeJounte is an awesome player. He has even more offensive clunky questions with LeBron and AD. Another jump shooter that's a pull-up jump shooter at that, right? And a mid-range pull-up jump shooter, I'd give him that. But again, you clunk up the spacing again, and I'm not like DeJounte's obviously not Russ level shooter, but like again, teams, if they're going to guard the Lakers, they're going to pack the paint and force DeJounte to make open threes, which he can. But again, it's just the fit is still a little bit clunky to me. And if I'm giving up all that anyway, I'd rather go get a star for that. I'd go canvas the league for whoever else you can get. And go that route than returning with the DeJounte. But I think that's an interesting way to look at it. I think DeJounte is a guy that I think would at least cost less than Trey. But if the cost less is one first round pick, I just don't think you're saving that much.
That's fair.
Right. Yeah, I go and to so, me. Yeah. It's a tough kind of conundrum. The other guy that I would love, and this isn't connected to this conversation, is Donovan Mitchell. I think he's a little bit more kind of realm I would love to go and get. But like if Cleveland wins one more game this series, I think he's probably staying. And again, they traded. I don't know if you realize what they moved for him, Vinay. They moved three firsts, two swaps, and Lauri Markkanen for Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
Now that's a haul of stuff they gave up, so they're not going to move off him very easily, but that's enough on Donovan. Yeah, with Trey and DeJounte, it's an interesting thing to look at with D'Lo and Brooklyn trying to parse them into this trade. That's a lot to going out the door for one player, and you talked about the second apron stuff, and I'll be frank, I don't expect my team to hit on all those margins. So you need some margin for error on the players.
Yeah.
And you have none if you make these moves. So
that's
kind of where I sit. And I think it's a tough situation for everyone. That's going into the summer.
Yeah. So, you know, we're continuing to watch just kind of the playoffs and see what sort of style of basketball prevails and what's successful. We didn't really touch on the kind of learnings that we had from the playoffs. We could probably wait till the next round, or at least maybe before the finals show up. But I would say if I had to add one thing, size matters. Like in the playoffs, size has mattered and execution has mattered for like all of these teams. Like, Dallas is back in the series is winning the series against OKC because their role players are knocking down open threes. They have guys playing big. They have multiple centers crashing the glass, finishing plays. Obviously, we know the Minnesota Denver is a battle of the heavyweights. Whoever wins that game of physicality is who's going to win that sort of situation. And it's just been really interesting to see, Knicks Pacers is also another who can beat the crap out of the other team better and win it. So it seems like that physicality continues to be the theme that prevails in the playoffs.
I'm glad you brought it up. Let's close on this because I think this is another polarizing big, and I see Zach LaVine in the chat as well. We can get to that in another time. But Worthy's asking, is Valanciunas the type of size you want on the team? Is that the type of big you would go at? And to me, I think Valanciunas probably cost you the mid-level exception. He's around for that type of money. Is that the type of big you would like to add? Is Valanciunas, I guess, match the size and kind of physicality stuff that you're speaking on? I have my answer, but I'll give that after. Talk to me on Valanciunas.
If we're going to go LeBron, AD, Valanciunas at the 3-4-5, I like the size of Valanciunas. I'm a little worried about the athleticism of Valanciunas is my main concern. Yes. I don't think – sorry, I was going to say, if we're going to have this situation where – we're going to have a plodding big, like a slow-footed, but just like a heavy, really rim-protecting, deters people from the rim sort of big. I don't mind that because that means that Bron and AD are probably going to leak out in transition a little bit early for that player to clean up the glass. So that guy's going to be the last guy down the floor. So I don't mind that. My concern is, and this is actually a great name to suggest because I actually talked to my guy Charles. He's a New Orleans guy. I asked him a bunch of questions about Valanciunas, and he said that, and one of the guys that watches every Pelicans game, knowledgeable guy, he said that Valanciunas isn't bad, but he's also not good. Like, he's not like a guy that you throw in there, you go, this guy's just, now he's stopping every shot at the rim. And one of the things that hurt them, I think, in the OKC games he was mentioning is teams knew that Valanciunas would never come out to the perimeter to try and guard. You know, like because he couldn't really move his feet. And so teams would kind of pick on that and torch him. His foot speed and recovery speed, stuff like that, was a little difficult for him. So I don't know if we're going to be running drop coverage anymore, you know, with the way that we ran it under Ham. So that all changes now, like what we need out of it. But from the size aspect, a guy who's big enough to guard a Jokic, a guy who's big enough to guard an Embiid, or any other kind of Vucevic, any type of heavy big, he fits the physical part of it. I just don't know if he fits the athletic or the skill part of it necessarily.
Yeah, that's where I'm at as well. I think he gives what I like about him. He gives you another release valve, right? And like post up offense has kind of been thrown out the gutter. But I like that, you know, he's at least an option down low, and mm-hmm. he's a guy that can attack mismatches. I think the problem is, again, he doesn't solve a lot of my issues in terms of the defensive side. He's not very agile. He's not like a very good rim protector. He's a great offensive rebounder, but I think there's a reason why every playoffs, Vinay, he just gets played off the floor, or he just can't play big minutes because the game becomes too intense and they pick on him in pick and roll coverages. And I think he just, again, limits your versatility, which is not what I want. I want the team to be more versatile, not less. And I think that's where Valanciunas comes in. But I think he's the right type. Like, if Valanciunas was on the team for Taurean Prince money, I think like there's your steal of that, right?
Oh, yeah,
I think
for sure.
But if he's your mid-level exception or making 12 to 13 million, which I think is kind of the market for a guy like him, I would pass. But yeah, it's an interesting type of name. It's kind of the route I would go. I would like to get a little bit more resources in the center position. We've been throwing minimum salaries at the center position for a while now, non-AD centers, of course. I would like to invest a little bit into that if you could. I don't know the exact names that'll be out there for now, but I think it's something this team is desperately needed. And I think moving LeBron to the three has some, you know, issues there, but I like just the size of that. But I'm not really a Valanciunas guy. So, but I think it's the right idea of how we should approach the summer.
Yeah. There was a, you know, I think this will probably be my last thought on this. I think there was something that was floated out there. Or it wasn't something that was put out there, but you know, the D'Lo thing, the interest of D'Lo in Orlando and then possibly wanting to sign him. I was just like, maybe there's an opportunity there for the Lakers to sign and trade him to Orlando for like Wendell Carter Jr. and like Markelle Fultz or something like that. You know, like those are guys that just kind of, they're good players. They're on decent size, you know, decent, good role players, a little more defensive minded, blue collar style. Lakers could pull off a trade like that for D'Lo. I think that would be, you know, would help a lot more for like those games where we really need our young guys or just cause the dirty work to be done with that sort of situation. So I'll be curious to see what happens, Raj. You know, obviously we still got quite a while to go before we hear about some of the player option stuff being executed. The head coaching search seems like it's continuing to move on. As usual, and we will continue chatting and debating and trying to figure out what's happening with whatever news gets released. But Raj, did you have any last takes, any last thoughts before we let the folks go? Did you think anything?
I think we covered pretty much everything. Yeah, there was some. I think the Bronny rumors are kind of. Oh, I think that was the last thing, was like Bronny was rumored, but we can get to that in the next pod, and what centers and free agents are available as well. Get into that later, but long summer. I think they're gonna wait for Ty Lue, honestly, and then
I think so too.
Move from there. So
we have a lot. I think the Ty Lue situation is dependent on what the Paul George extension looks like. I don't think Ty Lue's gonna necessarily agree to go back and be the coach of the. I think he still has a year left technically, but I don't know if he'll take that extension. If like Paul George is not going to be there after next year or this coming year, like it's a very different team. Kawhi getting hurt four seasons in a row, basically, you know, not all of his fault, but like that's a tough situation. Ty Lue's basically a regular season coach because he doesn't know what he's going to get out of his best player by the end of the season, essentially. So I don't think that situation's black and white the way it is. Money wise, I think Ballmer will give it to him, but I think there's a basketball part of it that he has to kind of think about. I'll be curious to see what happens, and we'll definitely be back. Hopefully we won't take 2 weeks. I got a little busy, you got a little busy, and so we didn't get a chance to do it last week, but you know, if any news comes up, we'll certainly jump on it. But as always, we want to thank all the folks that joined the live chat, all 2300 of you that joined us on this Sunday night to talk about Lakers basketball and just kind of the news that's gone on, so we could share our thoughts about the coaching and the team and all that sort of stuff. Continue to watch the playoff games, try to get some themes of what winning basketball, championship basketball looks like, so we can figure out. So for all the folks that joined us, we appreciate you. Whether you like, share, subscribe, whatever you do, we appreciate you. And we hope that whether you're listening to this now or you're listening to this later, you have a wonderful day. I'll get this up on Apple and Spotify as soon as this is concluded, or you can just rewind it back on my Twitter or Raj's Twitter. But as always, we appreciate you. And if nothing else, we'll catch you in the next one. Take it easy.